Kenny McCaskill, your new book, looking all at Lockerbie, and the convictions, looking at Al McGrahy, that hits shelves today. A lot of people will be asking, first of all, what are the reasons for writing this book?
Well, it's to get the information out there. When I first met the victims, when I was Justice Secretary, through to conversations I've had with victims' families ever since. What people want is information. It's a seminal moment in Scottish society. It's like the Dunblane massacre, the Ibrox disaster. People remember where they were when they heard that news. Scotland suffered. Families the length and breadth of the world have suffered. And I think it's important that as much information should be out there. And a lot of the information that I put out there hasn't been disclosed before, or certainly hasn't been put in the perhaps in the forefront.
And so this isn't a case then of cashing in on a tragedy, so to speak?
No, not at all. I had no intention of writing the book until people encouraged me to do so. I then did it. I've spoken to many of the families involved at the time and since. And as I say, I think the real desire is for openness and truth. And there's a lot not being said. And this is now my opportunity to have my say and my tuppence worth, but also to put out information because I was central and pivotal to it. And there's a lot of that information I think many people who will read it will be astounded at.
Out of that then, of the information that isn't already out there, what do you think is the most astonishing thing people will find about this?
Well, I think the most astonishing thing is just how small a part the actual tragedy plays. I always knew that both I and Scotland were a small cog in a big wheel, that there were bigger things ongoing. What I didn't realise at the time, and have only researched later, is just how small a cog and how big a wheel. It was a tragedy for all those that were killed on the ground and in the air, but it postdated events that had been ongoing, not just the downing of an Iranian airliner, but attacks elsewhere. It was part of a series of action and reaction, terror, counter-terror, that sadly continues to this day. This book spans not just 1988, the trial and the subsequent release, it spans 45, 50 years, and it's still going on. And equally, terrorism is just one small part, because a much bigger aspect and what comes out in this book was the importance for the UK, the USA and many other countries of commercial deals, of security and state interests, both shoring up against Islamic terror and also rendering prisoners into the hands of Colonel Gaddafi.
So in words then, these governments and other bodies then have tried to use this tragedy to their benefit?
Well, I think the UK and the US have been hugely hypocritical. I think if people read this book, they will realise that Tony Blair went and embraced Colonel Gaddafi. He was also joined later by Gordon Brown. The day after Blair embraced Gaddafi, a huge deal was signed with a major company. The following day, MI6 rendered a prisoner to the CIA, who returned him against his wishes to Colonel Gaddafi. That happened 5 years before the release of McGrahy. So for many years, the UK government and the American governments were courting Libya. They subsequently decided that Gaddafi was too much of a rogue element, and they toppled him, with the tragedy that we see today in Libya is a dreadful situation. But there had been commercial deals, security deals, and they chose to give a political black spot to Scotland to say, sort it out, take the blame, when they were conniving with the same country they accused of giving sustenance to.
So with the knowledge that that was going on then, were there reasons for not saying that at the time?
Well, some of this only came out later. I didn't know about the collusion of the CIA and MI6. That came out with an investigation by Human Rights Watch, an international NGO. I had been aware, only after the date of the release of McGrahy, that the Police Service of Northern Ireland had been overtraining Colonel Gaddafi's elite forces. That was, I think, a few months after I had released McGrahy and been criticised by the UK government. They had been sustaining Colonel Gaddafi. It was only some year ago that I found out that the so-called tumultuous reception that I was criticised for wasn't actually all that was portrayed. It was about TV scenes being pulled together. And the UK and the Americans knew that. But they chose to say that the government had been naive, that I had been at fault. And yet they actually connived with Gaddafi's lies.
In terms of the role of the Scottish government then, well, the UK and the US governments were trying to bring on their own trade deals, did the Scottish government have any part to play in that? Did the Scottish government not try to bring anything about for themselves through this?
Well, you know, we just basically had to deal a hand that was deltas. Scotland didn't choose to have this. This plane, after all, didn't take off from Scotland, wasn't due to land here. If it hadn't been for the fact that it had been delayed 5 or 6 minutes at Heathrow, the explosion would have taken place in the North Atlantic and we would have been oblivious to it. There would have been reverberations and tragedy, but it wouldn't have affected us. As it was, it not only devastated the town of Lockerbie, it's caused huge issues for Scotland, Scottish society, Scottish justice, and we just had to deal with it. The British government were intent on getting Megrahi back to Libya. They signed a deal, a prisoner transfer agreement with Libya against the wishes of the government of Scotland. We did try to get some concessions when we knew it was going through because we didn't have any power to stop it and we knew they were going to do it. As it was, they didn't give us any concessions and they pressed on regardless. Ultimately, though, that was a small facet because I refused the prisoner transfer agreement because it became quite clear in my investigations, and I didn't know again that some of this came out afterwards, but at the time I investigated, it was quite clear that at the time of an agreement for the trial on Camp Zeist, the unusual trial of a Scottish trial in the Netherlands, what was clear was that the UN had brokered a deal. The UK had given assurances to the United States, to the United Nations and to Libya that he would serve his sentence in Scotland. Now, I would normally grant a prisoner transfer agreement because I think prisoners should, whether Scots coming back here or foreign prisoners here, should serve a sentence in their home country. It's best for them and it's best for us. It saves the taxpayer here and we want to alleviate that. But I refused that because of those clear assurances that were given. And actually, the British government refused to give me any information on that. They just said, it's up to you. But I did grant Megrahi release on compassionate grounds. I've always adhered to that. Compassionate ground, I think, is important in every society. Every country had it. For sure, he lived beyond the 3 months, but I don't blame those who gave the medical reports. They did so with diligence and in honestly. I think the circumstances were that there were medicines being prescribed to Megrahi that weren't available to the NHS and he wouldn't have got here. Never mind, there is that kind of drive of the human spirit. If you're in a foreign prison cell and you're unwell, you turn your face to the wall. If you're at home with your family, you've got something to live for. So he lived longer, but he didn't have a high quality of life. He was a sick man, and those who condemn the compassionate release, nobody denies that he was terminally ill with prostate cancer. He lived on, but some of the photos that were shown by newscasters who went to interview him showed a man in his deathbed.
During a number of interviews this week you've had promoting this book, you've been asked about the conviction of Megrahi, and you say now that, you know, it was probably unsafe. I think you've been quoted as saying it's probably unsafe. What do you mean?
Well, I think, first of all, I have to say, I think the police investigators acted remarkably well in Scotland and diligently, and any allegations of planting of evidence is, I think, is just false. I think Dumfries and Galloway and every person who served did a remarkable job, and I think prosecutors in the courts in Scotland did a job honestly and diligently. But I think the major thing is it came out from the SCCRC, our Criminal Case Review Commission. It only came out afterwards, and the court didn't know it, that Tony Gauchy, one of the main witnesses, had got several million pounds from the Americans for giving evidence. Now, you've probably covered court cases over many years as a reporter. You will know that people giving evidence in Scottish courts are lucky if they get their expenses covered, and usually the expenses they get won't cover the expenses they've lost, because they'll get their bus fare, but it won't cover the pay that they've lost. This guy got millions, and that just raises questions. I think that taints the evidence. So on that basis alone, I think the conviction has to be unsafe. That said, that does not mean that Megrahi did not have a role. And I have to say, those who tried to portray Megrahi as a choir boy are wrong. He was a Libyan agent. Libya was a nasty, brutal state under Colonel Gaddafi and is not to be exculpated in any shape or form. But he was offered up by the Libyans at the desire of not just Britain and America, but the United Nations as well. And he was, to some extent, the sacrificial lamb, because there was clearly an agreement that Megrahi and his co-accused Fima would go to trial, but there would be no regime change, there would be no pursuit of Colonel Gaddafi. So what Scotland was left with was dealing with a foot soldier who had a role, I believe, but not with the main man.
But by saying that the conviction was probably unsafe, and you've always stuck by that he was released on compassionate grounds, but by now saying... that the conviction was probably unsafe. Does that cast doubt on you saying that you'd release them on compassionate grounds?
No, I did release them on compassionate grounds because when I was Justice Secretary, I would defend the situation. The situation remains. He's convicted by a Scottish court, and until that changes, that's the situation. I do believe that there's doubt cast on the basis upon which he was convicted, and that's not a criticism of those involved. Equally, any suggestion that we should have a retrial is simply driven by, frankly, ambulance-chasing lawyers or those in the McGrahy industry. What purpose would it serve? I think when you speak to victims' families, do they want a further trial? What they want is an investigation. If there is to be an investigation, it can't be carried out by a Scottish court because we need to know what was ongoing in the Pentagon. We need access to the files from MI6. We need to have information that's held in Libya. So this, as the trial was internationally designated in the Netherlands, we need an international inquiry that would allow us access not simply to the events of Lockerbie and the bombing all those years ago in 1988, but to the events that preceded and post-dated it, to the commercial dealings, the security dealings, and the discussions between the UK, the USA, the United Nations and Libya about the events and beyond.
And how likely do you think it is we will have an international inquiry like that?
I think that's very unlikely. I think it's in some ways very sad. But the Iraq War, the Chilcot Report, we've seen just how difficult it is to get any inquiry into this. Because if you look into Lockerbie, you also have to look into the USS Vincennes that brought down an Iranian airliner in the July of the December in which Lockerbie was downed. And it goes back beyond that. So I think, sadly, there's probably too many players with too much to hide. But it's not just in Libya that things have been hidden. It's things around the world.
Now, we've heard from the Justice for McGrahy campaign group who've accused you of hiding the truth behind the investigation into the bombing. What's your response to them?
Not at all. I acted, I believe, appropriately when I was the Justice Secretary. Justice for McGrahy are entitled to pursue this, but I mean, on what basis? At the end of the day, you know, what we have to look to is the wider issues, not simply the Lockerbie bombing, but the factors leading up and post-dating it. We need to look at those that were involved. I believe McGrahy was a player, but so was Colonel Gaddafi, so were other nation states, and so were other terrorist organisations. So there's a McGrahy industry out there. They're going to keep going forever and a day. But I think the fact of the matter is the McGrahy family weren't interested in pursuing this in Scotland. And that probably tells you a hell of a lot.
The book hit shelves today. What's your ultimate hope from it?
Well, I think to raise awareness, to realise that it wasn't simply the events of Lockerbie or my decision to release the scandalous situation and the hypocrisy of the US and UK governments in criticising me in Scotland and conniving with Libya and others. So I think it's about raising awareness. This is, you know, a major aspect of Scottish life. I say in the book, I remember where I was when I first heard the news. I was at home with my, you know, first son, the second son hadn't been born and was very young. I think other Scots have that. It's lived with us. It's scarred us in many ways. So I hope this will provide information, and I think some of it will be revelatory to the people of Scotland. We not only suffered the Lockerbie bombing, but we've been kicked about the park by the UK and USA shamefully.